goals. Catherine then broke everyone into groups of two or three and asked each group to propose a list of results categories that might serve as the team's scoreboard. Don't quantify any of this yet, just create the categories. Within the hour, the group had generated more than 15 different kinds of results categories. By combining some and eliminating others, they narrowed them to 7: revenue, expenses, new customer acquisition, current customer satisfaction, employee retention, market awareness, and product quality. They also decided that these should be measured monthly, because waiting a full quarter to track results didn't give them enough opportunities to detect problems and alter activities sufficiently. Unfortunately, now that the discussion was turning back toward the business, some of the levity in the room seemed to evaporate, and as usual, it would be replaced by criticism. Martin began, "I'm sorry, but this is nothing new, Catherine. Those are pretty much the same metrics that we've been using for the past 9 months." It felt as if part of Catherine's credibility was diminishing right before their eyes. JR piled on, "Yeah, and none of it has helped us drive revenue. Frankly, I'm not sure any of these matter if we don't get a few deals closed and fast." Catherine was almost amused at the predictability of what was unfolding before her. As soon as the reality of business problems is reintroduced to a situation like this one, she thought, people revert back to the behaviors that put them in the difficult situation in the first place. But she was ready. "Okay, Martin, can you tell me what our market awareness goal for last quarter was?" Mikey corrected her boss. "We call it public relations activity." "Okay, fine." She turned back to Martin. "Can you tell me exactly what the PR goal was?" "No, but I'm sure that Mikey can. I can tell you what our product development dates are, though." "Okay, then just tell me how we did in terms of public relations activity." She directed the question at Martin again, making it clear that he ought to know the answer. He seemed puzzled. "Hell, I don't know. I assume that Jeff and Mikey talk about that stuff. But I'm also assuming that we didn't do very well, given our sales numbers." Mikey was remarkably calm, which only made her subsequent remarks all the more unpleasant. "Listen, I came to the meetings every week with my PR numbers, but no one ever asked about them. And besides, I can't get us any press if we don't sell anything." Though JR should have been more upset than anyone by the remark, Martin was the one to respond, and he did so sarcastically. "That's funny. I always thought that the purpose of marketing was to drive sales. I guess I've had that backward." Almost as though she hadn't heard Martin's remark, Mikey continued to defend herself. "I can tell you that the problems we're having are not due to marketing. In fact, I think my department has done remarkably well given what we've had to work with." Carlos wanted to say, "But your department cannot be doing well because the company is failing. And if the company is failing, then we are all failing, and there's no way that we can justify the performance of our own departments." But he didn't want to push Mikey any harder, sensing that his colleague might snap under the pressure. And so he let it go. As frustrated as everyone was at that moment, Catherine was sure that a much-needed melee was about to ensue. But just like that, the conversation came to a halt and died. "So this is how it works," she thought to herself. Deep tissue. Catherine was determined not to lose the momentum. "Okay, I think I see the underlying problem." Jeff smiled and responded sarcastically, but in a nice way. "Really?" Catherine laughed. "Pretty observant of me, huh? Anyway, when I talk about focusing on results instead of individual recognition, I'm talking about everyone adopting a set of common goals and measurements, and then actually using them to make collective decisions on a daily basis." Seeing that they weren't going to cede the obvious point easily, Catherine decided to shift back toward a more questioning approach. "How often did you all talk about moving resources from one department to another in the middle of the quarter in order to make sure that you could achieve a goal that was in jeopardy?" The looks on their faces said, "Never." "And how disciplined were you during meetings about reviewing the goals in detail and drilling down on why they were or weren't being met?" She already knew the answer. Jeff explained, "I'd have to say that I just considered it Mikey's job to do marketing, Martin's to develop products, JR's to make sales. I would pitch in whenever I could, but otherwise I let them be accountable for their own areas, and I dealt with their issues on a one-on-one basis whenever I could." Catherine went back to the sports analogy, hoping this would get through to them. "Okay, imagine a basketball coach in a locker room at halftime. He calls the team center into his office to talk with him one-on-one about the first half, and then he does the same with the point guard, the shooting guard, the small forward, and the power forward, without any of them knowing what everyone else was talking about. That's not a team. It's a collection of individuals. And it was clear to everyone in the room that this was exactly what the Decision Tech executive staff was. Catherine was smiling in disbelief, as if to say, "I can't believe that I have to tell you this." In a more patient tone, she said, "All of you, every one of you, are responsible for sales, not just JR. All of you are responsible for marketing, not just Mikey. All of you are responsible for product development, customer service, and finance. Does that make sense?" Confronted by the simplicity and truth of Catherine's plea, and their obvious inadequacies as a group, any illusions of unity that had survived the first day and a half now appeared to be gone. Nick was shaking his head and then spoke as if he couldn't hold back any longer. "You know, I just wonder whether we have the right people sitting at this table. Maybe we need more heavy hitters who can get us into the right accounts and develop the right strategic partnerships." JR was not happy about the passive attack on sales, but as usual, he didn't respond. Catherine did. "Have you guys looked at your competitors' websites?" A few of them nodded, not knowing what she was getting at. "Do you know the track records of the people who are running those companies?" Blank looks on their faces. "Exactly. They don't have heavy hitters on their teams. Why do you think that they're making more progress than you are?" Jeff gave a half-hearted explanation. "Well, Wired Vineyard lined up a partnership with Hewlett-Packard right out of the gate, and Telecart is getting most of its revenue from professional services at this point." Catherine seemed unconvinced. "And what's stopping you from forming a partnership or adjusting your business plan like they did?" Jan raised her hand to speak, but didn't wait for Catherine to acknowledge her. "Don't take this wrong, Catherine, but could you start saying us and we instead of you? You're the CEO and you're part of our team now." The room stopped, waiting to see how Catherine would handle the pointed comment. She looked down into her lap as if she were trying to decide how to respond and then looked back up. "You're right, Jan. I'm not a consultant here. Thanks for calling me on it. I guess I just don't feel like I'm part of the group yet." "Join the club." Jan's response caught everyone off guard. "What do you mean by that?" asked Nick. "Well, I don't know about you guys, but I don't feel connected to what's going on outside of finance. Sometimes I feel like a consultant myself. At other companies where I've worked, I've always been more involved in sales and operations, and right now I feel isolated in my own area." Carlos agreed with her. "Yeah, it does seem like we don't really have the same goals in mind when we're at staff meetings. It almost feels like we're all lobbying for more resources for our departments or trying to avoid getting involved in anything outside our own areas." It was hard for anyone to argue with Carlos's logic. He continued, "And you guys think I'm such a prince for volunteering, but that's how everyone works at most of the companies I've worked for." Catherine was relieved to see that a few of the people on the team were breaking through, which is why she was so blindsided by the reaction to her next remark. "The politics around here are astounding, and they're a result of everyone being far too ambiguous about what we're all trying to accomplish, and that makes it easy to focus on individual success." Nick was frowning now. "Wait a second. I agree that we're not the most healthy group of executives in the Valley, but don't you think you're going a little too far when you say we're political?" "No. I think that this is one of the most political groups I've ever seen." As the words came out of her mouth, Catherine realized that she probably could have been a little more delicate. Right away, she could sense the people in the room banding together to challenge her harsh critique. Even Jeff took issue. "I don't know, Catherine. This might be a function of your not having worked in high tech. I've worked in some pretty political companies in the past, and I don't know if we're all that bad." Catherine wanted to respond, but decided to let the others empty their chambers first. Nick fired away. "I think we're about average, based on what I've heard from other executives. Keep in mind, this is a tough market." Smelling blood in the water now, Mikey dove in. "I agree. I mean, you've joined the company at a weird time, and to make that statement just after a few weeks is pretty careless." Although her colleagues didn't agree with the harshness of that remark, Mikey knew that they weren't going to challenge her on this one and risk wasting an opportunity to regain a little of the upper hand with their new boss. Catherine waited until no more comments came and then responded. "First of all, I am sorry if my comment sounded flip. You're right in that I haven't worked in high tech, and so my reference point could be a little off. She let the partial apology sink in before continuing and made sure not to begin her next sentence with the word but. And I certainly don't want to come across as condescending to you, because that doesn't help us get where we need to go. Catherine sensed that a few of the team members, Jan, Carlos, and Jeff, received her statement in the sincere vein in which it was intended. She continued, "At the same time, I don't want to downplay the very dangerous situation that we're all in. We have big problems, and I have observed enough of this group to know that politics are alive and well here." As graciously as she acknowledged the concerns of her people, Catherine was certainly not backing down. And frankly, I would rather overstate the problem than understate it. But only for the good of the team, not for my own satisfaction, I can assure you of that. Because of her consistent behavior over the past day and a half, and the confidence with which Catherine made a remark, most of her staff seemed convinced that she was sincere. Nick frowned, but Catherine couldn't tell if he was angry or confused. It was confusion. "Maybe you should tell us exactly what you mean by politics." Catherine thought for just a moment, and then answered as though she were reciting from a book she had memorized. "Politics is when people choose their words and actions based on how they want others to react rather than based on what they really think." The room was silent. Martin, as serious as ever, cut through the tension. "Okay, we're definitely political." Though he had not intended to be funny, Carlos and Jan laughed out loud. Jeff just smiled and nodded his head. As compelling as the points she was making were, Catherine could see that members of the group were still trying to decide whether to embrace her ideas or attack them. It became immediately clear that the next move would be an attack. Attack. To Catherine's surprise, it was J.R. who challenged her, and he wasn't particularly nice. "I'm sorry, but you're not going to make us wait 3 weeks to find out what the other dysfunctions are you? Can you just tell us what they are so we can figure out what's not working and get on with it?" Taken at face value, the comment would have been somewhat innocuous, maybe even a compliment if it were offered in the spirit of true curiosity. But in that moment, with the tone in which it was asked, and given the usually mellow nature of the person who posed the question, it was the harshest comment thus far of the off-site. Had Catherine been a less secure executive, she would have been rocked by the remark. And for a moment, she almost let herself get disappointed that the goodwill she thought she was generating had dissipated so quickly. But then she realized that this was precisely what she needed in order to provoke real change in the group, honest resistance. As much as she wanted to stick to her plan and gradually unveil her simple model, Catherine decided to take JR's advice. "No problem. Let's go through the other three dysfunctions right now." Exhibition. Catherine went to the whiteboard, but before she filled in the second box from the bottom, she asked the group a question. "Why do you think that trust is important? What's the practical downside for a group that doesn't trust one another?" After a few seconds of silence, Jan tried to help Catherine out. "Morale problems, inefficiency." "That's a little too general. I'm looking for one very specific reason why trust is necessary." No one seemed ready to offer an answer, so Catherine quickly provided it for them. Just above absence of trust, she wrote, "fear of conflict." If we don't trust one another, then we aren't going to engage in open, constructive, ideological conflict, and we'll just continue to preserve a sense of artificial harmony. Nick challenged, "But we seem to have plenty of conflict, and not a lot of harmony, I might add." Catherine shook her head. "No, you have tension. But there is almost no constructive conflict. Passive, sarcastic comments are not the kind of conflict I'm talking about." Carlos weighed in, "But why is harmony a problem?" "It's the lack of conflict that's a problem. Harmony itself is good, I suppose, if it comes as a result of working through issues constantly and cycling through conflict. But if it comes only as a result of people holding back their opinions and honest concerns, then it's a bad thing. I'd trade that false kind of harmony any day for a team's willingness to argue effectively about an issue and then walk away with no collateral damage." Carlos accepted the explanation. Catherine pressed her luck. "After watching a few of your staff meetings, I can say with a degree of confidence that you don't argue very well. Your frustration sometimes surfaces in the form of subtle comments, but more often than not, it is bottled up and carried around. Am I right? Instead of answering her semi-rhetorical question and giving Catherine a modicum of satisfaction, Martin prodded her. So, let's say we start arguing more. I don't see how that is going to make us more effective. If anything, it's going to take up a lot more time. Mikey and JR were nodding now. Catherine was ready to take them on, but Jan and Carlos stepped in for her. First, Jan. Don't you think we're wasting time as it is by not hashing things out? How long have we been talking about outsourcing IT? I think it comes up at every meeting, and half of us are for it, half are against it, and so it just sits there because no one wants to piss anyone off. Carlos added with a sense of conviction that he rarely showed, and ironically, that is exactly what pisses us off. Martin was growing more and more convinced and wanted to learn about the rest of the model. Okay, what's the next one? That was as close to an acknowledgement of being right as Catherine was going to get from Martin. Catherine went back to the whiteboard. The next dysfunction of a team is the lack of commitment and the failure to buy into decisions. She wrote the dysfunction above the previous one. And the evidence of this one is ambiguity, which she wrote next to it. Nick was re-engaging now. Commitment? Sounds like something my wife complained about before we got married. The group chuckled at his mediocre joke. Catherine was ready for the reaction. I'm talking about committing to a plan or a decision and getting everyone to clearly buy into it. That's why conflict is so important. As smart as he was, Martin was not afraid to admit his confusion. I don't get it. Catherine explained. It's as simple as this. When people don't unload their opinions and feel like they've been listened to, they won't really get on board. They do if you make them, countered Nick. I'm guessing your husband doesn't let his players vote on whether they want to run wind sprints. Catherine welcomed this kind of challenge. No, he doesn't. But he'd let them make a case why they think they shouldn't. And if he disagreed with them, which in that situation I'm sure he would, he'd tell them why and then send them off running. So this isn't a consensus thing. Jan's statement was really a question. Heavens no, insisted Catherine, sounding like a schoolteacher again. Consensus is horrible. I mean, if everyone really agrees on something and consensus comes about quickly and naturally, well, that's terrific. But that isn't how it usually works. And so consensus becomes an attempt to please everyone, which usually turns into displeasing everyone equally. Jeff made his remark with a look of pain on his face, as though he were reliving a bad memory. Exactly. The point here is that most reasonable people don't have to get their way in a discussion. They just need to be heard and to know that their input was considered and responded to. So where does the lack of commitment come into play? Nick wanted to know. Well, some teams get paralyzed by their need for complete agreement and their inability to move beyond debate. GR spoke up. Disagree and commit. Excuse me? Catherine wanted him to explain. Yeah, my last company we called it Disagree and Commit. You can argue about something and disagree, but still commit to it as though everyone originally bought into the decision completely. That lit a bulb in Jeff. Okay, I see where conflict fits in. Even if people are generally willing to commit, they aren't going to do so because, Carlos interrupted, because they need to weigh in before they can really buy in. The room seemed to understand that. What's the last dysfunction? Everyone was surprised that it was Mikey who asked, and she actually seemed interested in the answer. Catherine went to the board to fill in the last empty box. Before she could, Martin had opened his laptop and started typing. Everyone froze. Catherine stopped and looked at her chief technologist, who seemed clueless about the new sense of tension in the room. And then suddenly it dawned on him.
Oh, no, I really am taking notes about this. Look.
He was attempting to show everyone the document that he was creating on his screen. Everyone was amused at Martin's anxiety about explaining his behavior and not wanting to violate the team rules. Catherine laughed, pleased that her engineer was suddenly enthusiastic about what was going on. That's okay. We believe you. I'll let it slide this time. Catherine looked at her watch and realized that the group hadn't taken a break for several hours. It's late. Let's go ahead and break for a half hour. We'll finish this later. Though they would deny it if asked, Catherine was certain that she saw disappointment on the faces of everyone in the room. JR was big enough to admit it. Let's go ahead and do the last one. And then he added humorously, I don't think any of us are going to be able to relax if we don't know what it is. As sarcastic as the comment could have sounded, buried just below the humor was a subtle but unmistakable sense of acknowledgement. Whether he was acknowledging the rudeness of his prior statement or the validity of what Catherine was explaining didn't seem as important as the tone of the comment itself. Catherine was glad to oblige. She went to the board for the last time and wrote, "Avoidance of accountability." She explained, "Once we achieve clarity and buy in, it is then that we have to hold each other accountable for what we sign up to do, for high standards of performance and behavior. And as simple as that sounds, most executives hate to do it, especially when it comes to a peer's behavior, because they want to avoid interpersonal discomfort." "What exactly do you mean by that?" Jeff asked. "I'm talking about that moment when you know you have to call one of your peers on something that matters, and you decide to let it go because you just don't want to experience that feeling when..." She paused and Martin finished the sentence for her. "When you have to tell someone to shut down their email during meetings."
"Exactly," Catherine confirmed appreciatively.
Carlos added, "I hate this one. I just don't want to have to tell someone that their standards are too low. I'd rather just tolerate it and avoid the..." He tried to think of the right way to describe it. Jan did it for him. "The interpersonal discomfort." Carlos nodded. "Yeah, I guess that's really what it is." He thought about it for a moment, then continued, "But it's weird. I don't have as much of a problem telling my direct reports what I think. I seem to hold them accountable most of the time, even when it's a sticky issue."
Catherine was thrilled by the remark.
"Right. As hard as it is sometimes to enter the danger with your direct reports and confront them with something sticky, it's even harder with your peers."
"Why's that?" asked Jeff.
Before Catherine could answer, Nick explained, "Because we're supposed to be equals. And who am I to tell Martin how to do his job, or Mikey, or Jan? Feels like I'm sticking my nose into the business when I do." Catherine explained further. "The peer-to-peer thing is certainly one of the issues that makes team accountability hard, but there's something else." No one seemed to have a clue, and Catherine was ready to answer her own question. Just then, Mikey's face lit up like she had just solved a puzzle. "No buy-in."
"What?" asked Nick.
"No buy-in. People aren't going to hold each other accountable if they haven't clearly bought into the same plan. Otherwise, it seems pointless because they're just going to say, 'I never agreed to that anyway.'" Catherine was shocked at her unlikely star pupil, and if that wasn't enough, Mikey went on to say, "This actually makes sense." Everyone looked at one another as if to say, "Did you hear what I heard?" On that note, Catherine excused the team for the last break of the day.
Film noir.
No matter how many times Catherine had built or refurbished teams, she never got used to watching the inevitable ebbs and flows. "Why can't we just make progress in one fell swoop?" she asked herself. In theory, with Mikey and Martin now seemingly on board, it should have been relatively easy to make the team work. But Catherine knew that reality did not usually match theory. She still had a long way to go. 2 years of behavioral reinforcement around politics is a tough thing to break, and one lecture, no matter how compelling, is not going to do it. The painful, heavy lifting was still to come. With just a few hours until the end of the first offsite, Catherine was tempted to end the session early and send everyone back to work on a relative high. But that would have been a waste of 2 critical hours, she thought. She needed to make as much progress as possible, and soon, to ensure that the board wouldn't be tempted to cut her efforts short. When the group had returned from their break, Catherine decided to introduce a relatively entertaining discussion topic relating to conflict, one that would hold her interest late in the day. "Let's talk more about conflict." She felt the room sink just a little at the prospect of taking on such a touchy subject, but Catherine was actually looking forward to this part. "Someone tell me what the single most important arena or setting for conflict is." After a pause, Nick took a stab.
"Meetings?"
"Yes, meetings. If we cannot learn to engage in productive ideological conflict during meetings, we are through." Jan smiled. "And I'm not joking when I say that. Our ability to engage in passionate, unfiltered debate about what we need to do to succeed will determine our future as much as any products we develop or partnerships we sign." It was late afternoon now, and Catherine sensed that her team was drifting into post-lunch food coma.
Her words didn't seem to be getting through to them, and she would have to make this interesting if she had any chance of making it stick. How many of you would rather go to a meeting than a movie? No hands went up. Why not? After a pause, Jeff realized that her question was not a rhetorical one. Because movies are more interesting, even the bad ones. His peers chuckled. Catherine smiled. Right. But if you really think about it, meetings should be at least as interesting as movies. My son, Will, went to film school, and I learned from him that meetings and movies have a lot in common. The group seemed more doubtful than intrigued, but at least Catherine had their interest for the moment. Think about it this way. A movie, on average, runs anywhere from 90 minutes to 2 hours in length. Staff meetings are about the same. Heads nodded, politely. And yet, meetings are interactive, whereas movies are not. We can't yell at the actor on the screen, "Don't go into the house, you idiot!" Most of the group laughed. Are they actually starting to like me? Catherine wondered in a brief and uncharacteristic moment of insecurity. She went on, and more importantly, movies have no real impact on our lives. They don't require us to act a certain way based on the outcome of the story, and yet meetings are both interactive and relevant. We get to have our say, and the outcome of any given discussion often has a very real impact on our lives. So, why do we dread meetings? No one answered, so Catherine prodded them. Come on, why do we hate them? They're boring. Mikey seemed to enjoy her answer more than she should have. Right, they're boring. And to understand why, all we need to do is compare them to films. Now the group was starting to get interested again. Catherine continued. Whether it's an action movie, a drama, a comedy, or an artsy French film, every movie worth watching must have one key ingredient. What is that ingredient? Martin answered dryly. Well, since we're talking about conflict, I guess that's it. Yes, I suppose that I telegraphed that one, didn't I? Every great movie has conflict. Without it, we just don't care what happens to the characters. Catherine paused for effect before delivering her next line. Let me assure you that from now on, every staff meeting we have will be loaded with conflict, and they won't be boring. And if there is nothing worth debating, then we won't have a meeting. The team seemed to like that statement, and Catherine wanted to deliver on her promise immediately. And so, we're going to start right now. She checked her watch. We have almost 2 hours until we break today, and so I thought I would have our first substantive decision-making meeting as a group. Nick objected, with a serious look on his face. Catherine, I'm not sure I can do this. Caught off guard, everyone waited for an explanation. I never received an agenda. Everyone, including Jeff, laughed at the good-natured teasing of their former CEO. Application. Catherine wasted no time. Okay, here's the deal. Before we leave this meeting, we're going to establish something I call our overarching goal for the rest of the year. There's no reason that we can't do this now, right here, today. Someone take a stab. What do you mean exactly? Jan asked. Like a theme? Yeah. The question we need to answer is this. If we do anything between now and the end of the year, what should that be? Nick and JR responded in unison. Market share. Heads around the table nodded, except Martin's and Jan's. Catherine called them out. You two don't seem convinced. What are you thinking? Martin explained. I think it's product improvement. Jan added, and I'm not so sure that cost containment isn't our top priority. Catherine resisted the temptation to address their suggestions herself. Someone take them on. JR obliged. Okay, I think that our technology is as good as or better than both of our top competitors. And yet, they're getting more traction than we are. If we fall too far behind in terms of market capture, it won't matter what our products can do. Martin barely frowned. If that's the case, then imagine what things would look like if we fell behind in products. Ever the peacemaker, Carlos asked, can't we have more than one overarching goal? Catherine shook her head. If everything is important, then nothing is. She resisted any further explanation, wanting the group to work through it. Jan persisted. Can someone tell me why cost containment isn't the goal? Mikey responded quickly. Because if we don't find a way to make money, avoiding spending it does us no good. As annoying as Mikey's tone was, the truth of the statement could not be denied. Even Jan nodded in concession. Catherine made a quick comment. This is the most productive conversation I've heard since I've been here. Keep going. That was enough to give Jeff the courage he needed to make his point. He winced, as though he didn't want to prolong the conversation. I don't know. I'm not sure that market share is the right measure at this point. We don't really know what the size of the market is and where it's headed. He paused while he decided what to say next. I think we just need more good customers. Whether we have 20 more or 20 less than our competition doesn't seem to matter as much. Mikey jumped in. That's the same as market share. I don't think so, Jeff offered non-defensively. Mikey rolled her eyes. Nick wanted to avoid a repeat of the previous day's encounter with Mikey. Listen, whether we call it market share or customers doesn't really matter. We just need to sell. Now Catherine spoke. I think it matters. What do you think, JR? I think Jeff is right. If we get enough solid customers, the kind who will be active references for us, then we're doing fine. Frankly, I don't care at this point what our competition is doing. That seems like a distraction more than anything else, at least until we get rolling and the market takes shape. Martin seemed annoyed now. Listen, this is the same kind of conversation we have at every meeting. If it's not market share versus revenue, it's customer retention versus satisfaction. It all seems academic to me. Catherine forced herself to be silent for a few moments as the room digested Martin's comment. Then she asked, how do those conversations usually end? Martin shrugged. We run out of time, I guess. Okay, let's bring this conversation to a close in the next 5 minutes. Does anyone here believe that the key to the next 9 months has something to do with market share, customers, revenue, etc.? If someone thinks we're in the wrong ballpark completely, speak up now and loudly. People looked at one another and shrugged as if to say, I can't think of anything better. Good. Then let's come to closure on exactly what we're talking about. I'd like to hear someone make a passionate plea for the answer being revenue. JR, how about you? Well, one might argue that revenue is the right answer because we need cash. But frankly, that is far less important at this point than proving to the world that there are customers out there who are interested in our products. Revenue is not as important as closing deals and getting new customers. He had just talked himself out of the revenue answer. Does that make sense? Makes perfect sense to me. Catherine pushed on for clarity. So I'm not hearing anyone saying that revenue is our most important goal. Jan squinted and spoke up. Are you saying that we don't need to have a revenue goal? No, we will definitely have a revenue goal. It's just that revenue is not the ultimate measure of our success right now. We've narrowed it down to market share and new customers. Someone, tell me why market share is the right answer. Mikey. Market share is how analysts and the press define success. It's as simple as that. Martin countered. No, Mikey. Whenever I'm interviewed as a founder of the company, people ask me about key customers. They want marquee company names and people who are willing to vouch for us. Mikey shrugged. Catherine challenged her. Are you shrugging because you don't agree and you're giving up, or because you feel like he made a more compelling point than you can counter? Mikey thought about it. The second one. Okay, we're down to new customer acquisition. Someone tell me why this should be our collective overarching goal. This time, Catherine didn't need to call anyone out. Carlos volunteered. Because that will give the press something to write about. It will give our employees confidence. It will provide more product feedback for Martin and his engineers. And it will give us references to go out and get more customers next year. JR chimed in. Not to mention follow-on sales. Ladies and gentlemen, Catherine announced, unless I hear something extremely compelling in the next 5 seconds that makes me think otherwise, I believe we have a primary goal. Members of the staff looked at each other as if to say, are we really agreeing on something? But Catherine wasn't through yet. She wanted specifics. How many new customers do we need to get? The group seemed to be invigorated by the tangible nature of the discussion. For the next 30 minutes, they debated the number of new customers they could and should acquire. Jan lobbied for the most, followed by Nick and Mikey. JR was frustrated and argued hard for the fewest, wanting to keep his quota low so as not to discourage his salespeople. Jeff, Carlos, and Martin were somewhere in between. As the debate seemed to be running out of steam, Catherine jumped in. Okay, unless someone is holding something back, I think I've heard all the opinions in the room. And we are probably not going to agree completely, which is fine because there's no science here. I'm going to set the number based on your input, and we're going to stick with that number. She paused for a moment, then continued. Jan, we aren't going to do 30 deals this year, even though I know how much you'd love that revenue on the books. And JR, I can appreciate your desire to keep your folks motivated, but 10 is not enough. Our competitors are doing more than double that, and the analysts will throw up all over us if we come in at 10. JR seemed to offer no resistance to Catherine's logic. She continued, I think that if we can close 18 new customers with at least 10 being willing to be active references, we will be doing well. She paused to allow any last comments. When none came, she declared, All right then, we will have 18 new customers by December 31st. No one could deny that in 20 minutes, the team had made more progress than they normally did during a month of meetings. Over the next hour, they drilled down on the issue of new customers, discussing what each person, from marketing to finance to engineering, would need to do to make 18 deals possible. With 15 minutes to spare before the offsite was to officially end, Catherine decided to bring things to a close. Okay, let's call it a day. We'll be having a staff meeting next week when we can dig deeper into some of these and other critical issues. The group seemed relieved to be finished. Catherine asked one final question. Are there any comments, questions, or concerns people want to raise before we leave? No one wanted to bring up a topic that would delay their departures, but Nick decided to make one comment. I have to say that I think we made more progress during the past 2 days than I thought we would. Jan and Carlos nodded in agreement. Mikey, to everyone's surprise, didn't roll her eyes. Catherine wasn't sure whether Nick was trying to make points with her or whether he really appreciated what had happened. She decided to give him the benefit of the doubt and take the muted compliment to heart. And then JR spoke. I agree with Nick. We accomplished a lot here, and getting clarity around our major goal is really going to help. Catherine sensed that there was a qualifier coming, and she was right. JR continued, I'm just wondering if we need to continue having these off-sites now. I mean, we've come a long way, and we're going to have to do a lot of work over the next few months to close deals. Maybe we can just see how things go. He didn't really finish the remark, but let it hang there. Martin, Mikey, and Nick were cautiously nodding their heads in agreement. Whatever sense of accomplishment that Catherine had felt just a few minutes earlier had diminished significantly. As much as she wanted to put a quick and violent end to JR's suggestion, Catherine waited to see if anyone would do it for her. Just when she thought no one would help her, Jeff spoke up and demonstrated that he had indeed taken many of Catherine's ideas to heart. I'd have to say that canceling our next session in 2 weeks would be a bad idea. I just think that when we go back to work, it's going to be easy to slip back into the same stuff we've been struggling with for the past couple of years. And as painful as it's been for me to sit here for the past few days and realize how unsuccessful I've been in making us work like a team, we have a long way to go yet. Jan and Carlos nodded their agreement. Catherine used the opportunity to prepare her team for what was to come. She addressed her initial comment to JR and Nick. I appreciate your desire to spend as much of your time as possible closing deals. She was being slightly disingenuous, but wanted to avoid slamming them too hard, too early. However, I want to remind you about what I said at the beginning of this session yesterday. We have more money, better technology, and more talented and experienced executives than our competitors, and yet we are behind. What we lack is teamwork, and I can promise you all that I have no greater priority as CEO than making you, I mean us, more effective as a group. Mikey, Martin, and Nick seemed to be relenting now, but Catherine continued. And what I am about to say is more important than any other comment I've made since we arrived yesterday. She paused for effect. During the next 2 weeks, I am going to be pretty intolerant of behavior that demonstrates an absence of trust or a focus on individual ego. I will be encouraging conflict, driving for clear commitments, and expecting all of you to hold each other accountable. I will be calling out bad behavior when I see it, and I'd like to see you doing the same. We don't have time to waste. The room was silent. Okay. We'll be back here again in 2 weeks. Drive carefully, everyone, and I'll see you in the office tomorrow. As everyone packed up and headed for the door, Catherine wanted to feel good about what she had accomplished. However, she forced herself to face the likely prospect that things would have to get worse, maybe even much worse, before they would get better. Even most of the staff members seemed to be sobered by the likely prospect of ongoing pain, and none of them would have been surprised to know that one of their colleagues wouldn't be around by the time the next offsite began. They would have been shocked, however, to know that the colleague would not be Mikey. Part 3. Heavy Lifting. On site. Back in the office, even Catherine was surprised by the rapid deterioration of any progress that had been made during the offsite. The few glimmers of hope that did surface, like Carlos and Martin having a joint customer satisfaction meeting with their staffs, were enough to get employees whispering about what was going on. But in Catherine's mind, there was no denying that the team was still guarded with one another and with her. Based on the hallway demeanor she observed, Catherine felt as though the team had completely forgotten about their 2 days in Napa. There was little interaction and almost no signs of willingness to engage with one another. The team seemed as though they were embarrassed by having exposed themselves and were pretending that it had never happened at all. But Catherine had been through this many times before. And as disappointed as she was that the group had not completely internalized the concepts from the offsite, she knew that this was a typical first response. She also knew that the only way to defuse it would be to dive right back in and get the group's blood flowing again. She had no idea that she was about to hit an artery. It happened just a few days after the offsite had ended, on the same day that Catherine's first official staff meeting would later take place. Nick had called a special meeting to discuss a possible acquisition. He invited anyone on the team who was interested to attend, but made it clear that he needed Catherine, Martin, JR, and Jeff to be there. Jan and Carlos also showed up. Before starting the meeting, Nick asked, "Where's JR?" "He's not in the office this morning," Catherine said. "Let's get started." Nick shrugged and then began passing around a stack of glossy brochures to his colleagues. "The company is called Green Banana." The group laughed. "I know. Where do they get these names?" "Anyway, they're a company in Boston that is either complementary to us or a potential competitor. It's tough to say. In any case, I think we should consider acquiring them. They're hurting for cash and we've got more than we need at this point." Jeff, feeling more like a board member than anything else, asked the first question. "What will we get?" Nick, who had already decided that the deal made sense, answered quickly, "Customers, employees, technology." "How many customers?" Catherine wanted to know. Martin asked another question before Nick could answer the first one. "And is their technology good? I've never heard of them." Nick again had quick answers. "They're about half our size in terms of customers," he read his notes. "About 20, I think. And their technology is apparently good enough for those customers." Martin looked skeptical. Catherine frowned. "How many employees, and are they all in Boston?" "Yes, they have somewhere around 75 people, and all but 7 of them are in Beantown." During the Napa off-site meeting, Catherine had been careful to hold back her opinions in order to develop the skills of her team. But in the heat of real-world decision-making, restraint was not her best quality. "Hold on, this doesn't sound right to me, Nick. We would be increasing the size of the firm by 50% and adding a whole new set of products. I think we've got plenty of challenges to deal with as it is." As prepared as Nick was for dissent, he couldn't mask his impatience. "If we don't make bold moves like this, we're going to miss opportunities to distance ourselves from our competitors. We have to be visionaries here." Now Martin rolled his eyes. Catherine pushed on Nick. "First, I need to say that Mikey should have been at this meeting. I'd like to know what she thinks in terms of market positioning and strategy." "And I," Nick interrupted, "Mikey isn't going to add any value to this conversation. This has nothing to do with public relations or advertising. This is strategy." Catherine wanted to jump down Nick's throat for being so harsh to someone who wasn't in the room, and everyone could see that. But she decided it could wait for a few minutes. "I wasn't quite finished. I also believe that the issues we currently have around politics would only be exacerbated by an acquisition." Nick took a deep breath, the kind that says, "I can't believe I have to deal with people like this." Before he could say something he would regret, Jan jumped in. "And I understand that our cash position is better than any of our competitors and better than 90% of the technology companies in the Valley. But just because we have it doesn't mean that we should spend it, not unless it's a clear winner." Now Nick was about to regret his words. "With all due respect, Catherine, you might be a fine executive when it comes to leading meetings and improving teamwork, but you don't know squat about our business. I think you should defer to Jeff and me when it comes to things like this." The room froze. Catherine was sure that someone would pounce on Nick for his mini tirade. She was wrong. In fact, Martin had the audacity to look at his watch and say, "Hey, I'm sorry, but I've got another meeting. Let me know if you need my input." And he left. Catherine was perfectly prepared to call any of her reports on destructive behaviors that might hurt the team, but she didn't think the first opportunity would center around her. That made it more difficult, but necessary nonetheless. The question was whether she should do it privately or in front of the rest of the group. "Nick, would you rather that we have this conversation right here or one-on-one?" He stopped to consider her question carefully, fully aware of what was about to ensue. "I guess I could be macho and say, if you have something to say, go ahead. But I think we should have this one alone." He actually smiled, but only for a split second. Catherine asked the rest of the group if they would leave Nick and her alone. "I'll see you this afternoon at the staff meeting." They gladly left. As soon as they were gone, Catherine spoke, but in a confident and relaxed way, far more in control than Nick had expected. "Okay. First of all, don't ever slam one of your teammates when that person isn't in the room. I don't care what you think of Mikey. She is part of this team, and you have to take your issues to her directly or to me. You're going to have to make that right." Nick, all 6 feet 3 inches of him, looked like a seventh grader in the principal's office, but just for a moment. Then he regained his frustration and shot back at Catherine. "Look, I've got nothing to do around here. We were supposed to be growing much faster by now and getting involved in a lot more M&A activity. I can't just sit around and watch this place." Catherine interrupted. "So this is about you?" Nick didn't seem to hear her question. "What? This acquisition, it's about you wanting to have something to do?" Nick tried to backtrack. "No, I think it's a good idea. It could be strategic for us." Catherine just sat and listened. And like a criminal being interrogated, Nick started to spill his guts. "But yes, I am completely underutilized here. I moved my family halfway across this damn country with the expectation that I might someday be able to run this place, and now I'm bored, helpless, and watching my peers screw this thing up." Nick was looking down now, shaking his head out of both guilt and disbelief at his situation. Catherine calmly addressed his comment. "Do you think you're contributing to screwing this thing up?" He looked up. "No, I mean, I'm supposed to be in charge of infrastructure growth, mergers and acquisitions, and we're not doing any of that because the board says..." "I'm talking about the bigger picture, Nick. Are you making this team better, or are you contributing to the dysfunction? What do you think?" "I don't think you're making it better." She paused. "You clearly have a lot to offer. Whether or not you ever run this place..." Nick tried to explain. I wasn't trying to say that I want your job. I was just venting it." Catherine held up her hand. "Don't worry about it. You're allowed to vent from time to time, but I have to tell you that I don't see you stepping up and helping people. If anything, you're tearing them down." Nick wasn't ready to buy what Catherine was saying. He argued, "So what do you think I should do?" "Why don't you try telling the rest of the group where you're coming from? Tell them what you just told me, about feeling underutilized and moving your family across. That doesn't have anything to do with whether we acquire Green Banana or not." They both smiled for just a moment at the ridiculous name. Nick continued, "I mean, if they don't understand why we need to be doing things like this, then maybe..." He hesitated. Catherine finished his thought. "Maybe what? Maybe you should quit?" Nick was hot now. "Is that what you want? If that's what you want, then maybe I will." Catherine just sat there, letting the situation sink in for Nick. Then she said, "It's not about what I want. It's about you. You have to decide what is more important, helping the team win or advancing your career." Even Catherine thought she sounded a little harsh, but she knew what she was doing. "I don't see why those have to be mutually exclusive," Nick argued. "They're not. It's just that one has to be more important than the other." Nick looked at the wall, shaking his head, trying to decide whether he should be mad at Catherine or thank her for forcing his hand. "Whatever." He stood and left the room. Fireworks. By 2 o'clock, everyone was seated around the table in the main conference room, waiting for the staff meeting to begin. Everyone, that is, except Nick and JR. Catherine checked her watch and decided to get started. "Okay, today we'll do a quick review of what everyone is working on, and then spend most of our time laying the groundwork for the 18 deals we need to close." Jeff was about to ask Catherine where Nick and JR were when Nick walked in the room. "Sorry I'm late." There were 2 empty seats at the table, one next to Catherine and the other at the opposite end. He chose the one away from the CEO. Given what had happened earlier in the day, Catherine was not about to scold Nick for being late. The rest of the team seemed to understand her restraint. Instead, she launched into the meeting. "Before we get started, I need to..." Then Nick interrupted. "I've got something to say." Everyone knew that Nick could be rude, but the way he had just interrupted Catherine and after arriving late to her first official staff meeting seemed particularly audacious to the staff. Oddly enough, Catherine didn't seem flustered at all. Nick began, "Listen, I need to get some things off my chest here." No one moved. Inside, they were boiling with anticipation. "First, about the meeting this morning. I was out of line. I should have made sure that Mikey was there and that comment I made about her was not fair." Mikey was stunned. And then angry, but said nothing. Nick addressed her. Don't get all pushed out of shape, Mikey. I'll tell you about it later. It's not that big a deal. Strangely, Mikey actually seemed reassured by Nick's candor and confidence. He continued, Second, as much as I believe that Green Banana might be something we want to consider, my insistence on doing the deal is more about giving me something to work on. See, I'm beginning to feel that I made a bad career move by coming here, and I just want something that I can hang my hat on. I don't know how I'm going to explain what I've been doing for the past 18 months on my resume. Jan looked at Catherine, the only person in the room who didn't seem shocked. Nick continued, But I think it's time I faced the reality of the situation and made a decision. He paused before going on. I need to make a change. I need to find a way to contribute to this team and this company, and I need you guys to help me. Otherwise, I should leave. But I'm not ready to do that just yet. Catherine would have liked to claim that she knew that Nick would come around, but she would later admit to her husband that she honestly believed he would quit. Being wrong notwithstanding, she was suddenly thrilled that he was staying, and she couldn't quite explain why. The room was silent, not knowing how to respond to the statement that was out of character for both Nick and the team. Catherine wanted to congratulate Nick for being so open, but decided to let the moment speak for itself. When it became clear that the team had fully digested the magnitude of the situation and had nothing more to add, Catherine went ahead and broke the silence. I need to make an announcement. Martin was sure he was about to witness a group hug or some sort of touchy-feely conciliatory comment from Catherine until she completed her thought. J.R. quit last night. If the room was quiet when Nick finished speaking, it was dead now. But only for a few long seconds.
What?
It was Martin who reacted first.
Why?
It's not completely clear, explained Catherine.
At least not based on what he told me. Evidently, he's gone back to Adsoft to be a regional VP again.
Catherine hesitated before her next comment, which she considered withholding, but decided wouldn't be right.
He also told me he just didn't want to waste any more of his time at off-site meetings working out people's personal problems.
Another heavy moment. Catherine waited. Mikey spoke first.
Okay, does anyone else here think that this team-building stuff has gone too far? Are we making things better or worse?
Even Carlos raised his eyebrows as though he were entertaining Mikey's comment. The momentum in the room seemed tangible now, and it was moving away from Catherine. After the longest 3 seconds in Catherine's brief career at Decision Tech, Martin weighed in.
Well, I don't think it's news to anyone here that I hate doing this team stuff. I mean, it's like fingernails on a bloody chalkboard to me.
Catherine didn't need this. Then Martin finished.
But that's the biggest crock of shit I've ever heard. I think JR was just afraid that he didn't know how to sell this stuff.
Jeff agreed. He did admit to me a few months ago, over beers in an airport, mind you, that he has never had to sell into a market that didn't already exist, and that he preferred having a brand name behind him. He also said that he had never failed in his life and that he wasn't about to do so here. Jan added, and he hated when we asked him about sales. He felt like we were pounding on him. Mikey chimed in. Most of the sales that we've closed were done by Martin and Jeff anyway. I don't think the guy ever really knew how to. Catherine was just about to jump in when Nick spoke up.
Listen, I know I should be the last person to say this because I was JR's biggest critic behind the scenes, but let's not do this. He's gone, and we need to figure out what we're going to do.
Carlos volunteered. I'll take over sales until we can find someone else. Jan felt comfortable enough with Carlos to be direct with him, even in front of the rest of the group. As much as we appreciate your offer, I think that there are two other people in this room with more time on their hands and more experience with selling. She looked at Jeff, who was sitting next to Nick. One of you two. Jeff responded immediately. Don't get me wrong. I do whatever you want me to, but I've never run a sales organization or carried a quota for that matter. I love to sell to investors and even customers, as long as I'm with someone who knows what they're doing.
Mikey offered her opinion. Nick, you ran field operations at your last company, and you headed a sales team earlier in your career.
Nick nodded.
Martin added, But I remember when we interviewed Nick.
Martin often referred to people in the third person, as though they weren't sitting in the same room. It wasn't intentionally rude, just less personal.
He said that he wanted to break away from his career label as a field guy. He wanted to take on a more corporate, central leadership role.
Nick nodded again, quietly impressed that Martin had remembered anything about him. That's right, I felt like I was being pigeonholed in sales and field ops. No one spoke for a moment. Nick continued, But I have to say that I was damn good at sales and I enjoyed it.
Catherine resisted the temptation to begin selling Nick. Jeff didn't.
You do have a good relationship with the sales force already, and you have to admit that you've been frustrated by our inability to get into more deals. Carlos joked. Come on, Nick. If you don't do it, they're going to accept my offer. Catherine shrugged at Nick to say, he's right. In that case, it would be negligent of me to say no. Everyone laughed when suddenly a fire alarm sounded. Jan slapped her forehead. Oh, I forgot. We're having a fire drill today. The Half Moon Bay Fire Department said we have to start doing these twice a year. Everyone slowly gathered their things. Martin added a final bit of humor. Thank God. I could feel a group hug coming on any minute. Leaks. A few days later, Catherine began having problems with her laptop, so she called the IT department to see if anyone there could fix it. The IT department was really just four people, headed by a guy named Brendan, one of Jan's direct reports. Given the size of the group, it wasn't unusual for Brendan to handle some calls himself, especially if the call came from an executive, especially the CEO. Brendan arrived promptly and quickly identified the problem. When he informed Catherine that he would need to take the computer with him to fix it, she agreed, but explained that she would need it back before the end of the week. Oh, that's right. You have another off-site coming up. Catherine was not surprised that Brendan knew about the off-site. In fact, she was glad that employees knew how her team was spending her time while they were out of the office. But his next comment gave her reason for concern. I wish I could be a fly on the wall during those meetings. Catherine could not let the comment go without a question. Oh, yeah? Why is that? Brendan, whose technical ability was matched only by his lack of social awareness, responded without hesitation. Well, let's just say that people around here would pay big money to watch Mikey answer for her attitude. Though Catherine could not deny feeling slightly glad that others in the organization recognized Mikey's behavioral issues, her primary reaction to Brendan's remark was disappointment. She wondered how many other employees in the company knew details about what was happening at the off-sites. Well, I'm not sure that's how I'd characterize what we've been doing. Catherine knew that Brendan was not to be blamed for any of this, so she changed the subject. Anyway, thanks for taking care of my computer. Brendan left, and Catherine contemplated how she would handle the situation with Jan and the rest of the team. Offsite number two. The following week, just days after what quickly became known as the fire alarm meeting, the next Napa Valley session began. Catherine kicked off the event with her usual speech. We have more money, better technology, more talented and experienced executives, and yet we're behind our competitors. Let's remember that the reason we're here is to start working more effectively as a team. Catherine then raised a difficult topic, but in a tone that was as non-threatening as she could make it. I have a quick question for everyone. What, if anything, did you tell your people about the first off-site session we had? As hard as she tried, Catherine couldn't completely avoid creating an interrogation-like atmosphere in the room. I'm not here to pound on anyone. I just think we need to get clear on our behaviors as a team. Jeff went first. I didn't tell my people anything, not a single thing. The room laughed, because Jeff no longer had any direct reports. Mikey went next. I just said we did a bunch of touchy-feely exercises. She was trying to be funny, but everyone could tell that there was some degree of truth in what she was saying. No one laughed. Martin suddenly became defensive. If you have a problem with something we've done, then just tell us, because I'll admit right now that I had some pretty frank conversations with my engineers. They want to know whether we're wasting our time or not, and I think they're entitled to an explanation. And if that means violating some degree of confidentiality, then I'm sorry. The room was a little stunned by the uncharacteristic diatribe, which was both longer and more emotional than what they were used to from Martin. Catherine almost laughed. Whoa. I'm not mad at anyone here, and I'm not saying that we shouldn't have talked to our teams about the offsite. In fact, I should have been more explicit last time about our need to do so. Martin seemed relieved and a little embarrassed. Then Jan spoke. I probably told my team more than anyone else, and I'm guessing that one of them said something to you. Catherine felt as though she'd been caught by Jan. Well, in fact, it is one of your people who prompted me to ask this question. Mikey seemed to enjoy that Jan was being singled out. Catherine continued, But this isn't about you or anyone else in particular. I'm just trying to understand how things work in terms of confidentialities and loyalties. What do you mean by loyalties? Nick wanted to know. I mean, who do you all consider to be your first team? Not surprised by the confusion in the room, Catherine explained, This is not a lecture about maintaining confidential information, or at least that's not the focus of what I'm trying to say. It's beyond that.
Catherine was getting frustrated by her own inability to articulate the issue. She resorted to bluntness. What I'm trying to ask you is whether you think this team is as important to you as the teams you lead, your departments. Suddenly, everyone seemed to understand, and they didn't seem comfortable with the true answers in their heads. Jan asked, "So, you're wondering if we confide in our direct reports about things that we should be keeping between us here?" Catherine nodded. Mikey responded first. "I'm much closer to my staff than I am to this group here. I'm sorry, but it's true." Nick nodded. "I'd probably say that's true for me, too, with the exception of the sales group I just took over." He thought about it. "But I'd say that within a few weeks, I'll be closer to them than to this team." Though Nick's comment was meant as a joke and provoked a shallow laugh among the group, the sad truth of it seemed to deflate the room. Jan spoke next. "I think all of us would probably say that we consider our teams more important than this one." She hesitated before finishing her thought. "But no one more than me." That comment grabbed the attention of everyone at the table. "Do you want to explain that?" Catherine asked gently. "Well, as everyone here knows, I'm pretty tight with my people. Of my 8 direct reports, 5 have worked for me at other companies, and I'm something of a parent to them." Carlos joked. "She's a den mother." They laughed. Jan smiled and nodded her head. "Yeah, I'd have to agree. It's not that I'm overly emotional or anything like that. It's just that they know I do almost anything for them." Catherine nodded, as though she were figuring it all out. Martin defended Jan. "That's not a bad thing. My engineers know that I protect them from distraction and obstacles, and they work their butts off for me as a result." Jan added, "And they don't quit when things get tough. My people are extremely loyal." Catherine just listened, but Nick sensed that she was about to offer a counterpoint. "Are you saying that this is a problem? I would think that you want us to be good managers." "Of course I do," Catherine assured them all. "I'm glad to hear how strongly you feel about your staffs, and it's very consistent with what I learned during my initial interviews." The room waited, as if to say, "So what's the problem?" Catherine continued, "But when a company has a collection of good managers who don't act like a team, it can create a dilemma for them and for the company. You see, it leads to confusion about who their first team is." Jeff asked for clarification. "First team?" "Yes, your first team. And all of this relates to the last dysfunction, putting team results ahead of individual issues. Your first team has to be this one." She looked around the room to make it clear that she was referring to the executive staff. "As strongly as we feel about our own people, and as wonderful as that is for them, it simply cannot come at the expense of the loyalty and commitment we have to the group of people sitting here today." The team digested her remarks and the difficulty that they implied. Jan spoke first. "This is a tough one, Catherine. I mean, it would be easy for me to sit here and agree with you and give you a half-hearted assurance that this would be my first team, but I just don't see how I can abandon what I've worked so hard to build in my department." Carlos tried to find a happy medium. "I don't think you have to abandon it." He looked to Catherine for confirmation. She squinted, as if dreading having to hold a line. "Well, you don't have to destroy it, but you do have to be willing to make it secondary. And for many of you, that might very well feel like abandonment." Somewhat discouraged, the group considered the difficult proposition. Jeff tried to lighten the mood. "Think how crappy this has been for me. You guys were my first team. I didn't have anyone else to go to and complain." Everyone, including Mikey, laughed. And as much as Jeff was joking, they could see that there was a kernel of truth to what he said, and they felt sorry for him. Catherine felt the need to drive a point home. "I don't know how else to say this, but building a team is hard." No one spoke. Catherine could see doubt on their faces, but she wasn't deterred by it, because it didn't seem to be about whether building the team was important, but rather whether they could actually do it. Catherine always preferred that kind of doubt. Plowing on. Catherine pushed forward. "Listen, we aren't going to solve this one right here. It's a process, and we don't need to get bogged down contemplating our navels for more than a few minutes. Let's just stick to our plan of building a team, and then the prospect of putting this one first might not seem so daunting." The group seemed ready to shake off their funk, so Catherine asked a simple question to get things going. "How are we doing?" Jeff spoke first. "I think we can't deny what has happened since last off-site. I mean, if you would have told me that JR would quit, and that we would already have someone like Nick in his place, I would have accused you of engineering the whole thing from the beginning." Nick agreed.
Well, I never thought I'd be doing this job, and I certainly never thought I'd be having fun at it. But I think we may be in pretty good shape. Still, we have a long way to go to make our numbers.
Catherine refocused the discussion. But how are we working as a team?
Jan replied, I think we're doing okay. We seem to be moving in the right direction and definitely having more productive conflict.
The group laughed.
I don't know. I'm starting to have my doubts.
Catherine wouldn't have usually been surprised by a remark like that at this point in the process, except that it came from Carlos.
Why is that? She asked.
Carlos frowned. I don't know. I guess I still feel like we're not always talking about the big issues. Maybe I'm just getting impatient.
What big issues are you thinking about? Jan wondered out loud.
Well, I don't want to stir things up here, Catherine interrupted. I want you to.
Carlos smiled. Well, I guess I wonder whether we have our resources in the right place to make this work.
Martin seemed to sense that he was the target of Carlos's remark, and he was right.
What do you mean by resources?
Carlos stammered. Well, I don't know. I guess we have a pretty big engineering organization, almost a third of the company, I think, and, well, we could probably use more resources in sales, marketing, and consulting.
Martin didn't attack statements like that with emotion. He preferred what he liked to call a Socratic approach, a sarcastic version of the Socratic method. He was about to challenge Carlos's remark cleverly until Mikey joined in.
I agree with Carlos. Frankly, I don't know what half our engineers do, and I salivate over the thought of using our money for better marketing and advertising.
Martin sighed audibly as if to say, here we go again. His disgust was not lost on anyone in the room.
Catherine set the tone for what was about to happen.
Okay, let's have this out, and let's not pretend we're doing anything wrong. We owe it to our shareholders and our employees to figure out the right way to use our money. This is not a religious battle. It's about strategy.
Having diffused the tension just a bit, Catherine then stoked the flame. She directed her statement at Martin. I'm guessing you're tired of people questioning our investment in engineering.
Martin was calm, but intense.
You're damn right I am. What people can't seem to understand is that it's not engineering we're investing in, it's the technology. We are a product company. It's not like I'm spending money taking engineers on golfing trips.
Come on, Martin, exclaimed Nick. Engineers don't golf.
After lightening the moment with humor, the new head of sales then resumed the conversation.
It's not that we're saying you aren't being personally responsible. It's that you might be a little biased.
Martin was not ready to relent.
Biased? Listen, I go on as many sales calls as anyone else around here, and I speak to analysts.
Jan jumped in now.
Hold on, Martin. We're not questioning your commitment to the company. It's just that you know more about engineering than anything else, and maybe that makes you want to invest in the product.
Jan finally went to the heart of the matter.
Why do you get so defensive when someone makes a comment about engineering?
It was as though Jan had thrown a bucket of cold water on Martin, spilling a little on everyone else in the room.
Mikey piled on, but more gently than usual.
She's right. You act like we're questioning your intelligence.
More calmly now, Martin persisted.
Isn't that what you're doing? You're saying that I'm overestimating the amount of resources it takes to build and maintain our product.
Jan explained with more tact than Mikey could.
No, it's broader than that, Martin. We're questioning how good our products need to be for us to win in the market. We're questioning how much effort we need to be putting behind future technology, because that might come at the expense of having the market embrace our current technology.
Catherine stepped out of her facilitating role and added to Jan's perspective. And there's no way that you could figure that out on your own. I don't think anyone here is smart enough and has the breadth and depth of knowledge to know the right answer without hearing from everyone else and benefiting from their perspective. Ironically, the more reasonable the explanation was, the more wound up Martin seemed to become. It was as though he could easily deflect the insecure rants of Mikey, but he was being trapped by the fairness and logic of Jan and Catherine.
Listen, after all the time you put into building this product, I'm not willing to read a bloody epitaph of our company that blames our demise on bad technology.
Before anyone could point out to him that this was a blatant demonstration of the fifth dysfunction, Martin beat them to it.
And yes, I know that sounds a lot like I'm more interested in avoiding individual blame than I'm in helping the company win, but...
He didn't seem to have a good explanation for his behavior.
Jan bailed him out.
Why do you think I'm so anal about finances? It was a rhetorical question, so she answered it for everyone. The last thing I want to do is read in the Wall Street Journal that we didn't manage our cash and had to close the company down. And Carlos doesn't want customer support issues to sink us. And Mikey doesn't want us to fail because we can't build our brand. Even with such an even distribution of blame, Mikey couldn't seem to accept her own portion. She gave Jan a look that said, "I'm not worried about that." Jan ignored her and commented to the rest of the group, "It sounds like we're all scrambling for lifeboats on the Titanic." "I don't think it's quite that desperate," countered Nick. Catherine qualified her CFO's metaphor. "Well, then we're all trying to stand as close to them as possible just in case." Nick nodded as if to say, "Okay, I'll give you that." Catherine put the conversation back on topic and directed her leading question toward Martin. "So, where were we?" Martin took a deep breath, shook his head as if he were disagreeing with everything that had been said, and then surprised everyone. "Okay, let's figure this out." He went to the whiteboard and mapped out his entire organization, explaining what everyone was working on and how it fit together. His peers were genuinely amazed, both by how much they didn't know about everything going on in engineering and how it all fit together. After Martin had finished, Catherine gave the group 2 hours to discuss the relative merits of expanding or reducing the resources allocated to engineering and how to use them in other areas. During that time, the team argued vehemently at times, changed their minds, retrenched on their original opinions, and then decided that the right answer was not so apparent after all. Perhaps most important of all, every member of the team, including Catherine, at one time picked up the marker and went to the whiteboard to explain a point. If anyone yawned, it was because they were exhausted, not bored. Finally, it was Jeff who offered a solution. He proposed cutting one future product line entirely and delaying another for at least 6 months. Nick then suggested redeploying the engineers from those projects and training them to assist sales reps with product demonstrations. Within minutes, the group had agreed, laid out an aggressive timeline for implementing the change, and stared in amazement at the complex but workable solution on the whiteboard in front of them. Catherine then suggested they go to lunch and added, "When we get back, we're going to be talking about dealing with interpersonal discomfort and holding each other accountable." "I can't wait." Martin's facetious remark was not intended to be an indictment of the process, and no one took it that way. Accountability. After lunch, Catherine was determined to maintain the momentum of the morning session, and she decided that focusing on real issues rather than exercises was her best bet. So, she asked Nick to lead the team in a review of their progress around their 18-deal goal. He went to the board and wrote the 4 key drivers that the group had agreed to focus on during the previous off-site: product demonstrations, competitive analysis, sales training, and product brochures. Nick went right down the list. "Okay, Martin, how are you doing with the product demo project?"
"We're ahead of schedule. It turns out to be a little easier than we thought, so we should be done a week or two early. Carlos has been a big help."
Nick didn't like to waste time. "Great. How about competitor analysis, Carlos?" Carlos looked through a stack of papers on the table in front of him.
"I brought an update summary, but I can't find it."
He gave up looking.
"Anyway, we haven't really started yet. I haven't been able to pull together a meeting."
"Why not?" Nick was more patient than Catherine expected.
"Well, quite frankly, because many of your people haven't been available and I've been busy helping Martin with the demo."
Silence. Nick decided to be constructive. "Okay, which of my people haven't been available?" Carlos didn't want to point fingers.
"I'm not complaining about them. It's just that..."
Nick interrupted him. "It's okay, Carlos. Just tell me who needs to be more responsive."
"Well, I think that Jack is key, and Ken... And I'm not sure if..."
Now Catherine interrupted. "Does anyone see a problem here?" Nick answered first.
"Yeah, I need to communicate with my staff about our priorities and make sure they're ready to support them."
Catherine acknowledged that this was true, but she was looking for something else.
"But what about Carlos? Don't you think he should have come to you about fixing this problem before today? Not one of you challenged him when he said he hadn't even started the competitor analysis."
Uncomfortable silence again. Carlos was secure enough not to overreact to his boss's question. For the moment, he seemed to be considering it objectively. Martin jumped in.
"It's hard to come down on someone who's always pitching in."
Catherine nodded, then added firmly, "You're right, but that's not a good excuse. The fact is, Carlos is a vice president of the company, and he needs to prioritize better according to what we agreed to do, and he needs to challenge people in the organization who are not responding to his requests." Sensing now that Carlos was beginning to feel picked on, Catherine addressed him directly. I'm using you as an example, Carlos, because you are an easy person to let off the hook. But this could apply to anyone. Some people are hard to hold accountable because they're so helpful. Others because they get defensive. Others because they're intimidating. I don't think it's easy to hold anyone accountable, not even your own kids. That brought a few nods of acknowledgement from some of the team members. Catherine continued, I want all of you challenging each other about what you're doing, how you're spending your time, whether you're making enough progress. Mikey challenged, Well, that sounds like a lack of trust. Catherine shook her head. No, trust is not the same as assuming everyone is on the same page as you and that they don't need to be pushed. Trust is knowing that when a team member does push you, they're doing it because they care about the team. Nick clarified, But we have to push in a way that doesn't piss people off. His statement sounded like a question, so Catherine responded, Absolutely. Push with respect and under the assumption that the other person is probably doing the right thing, but push anyway and never hold back.